is the classic. I wrote about this.
Yes. By the way, I've hit the record button, and so we'll just see what happens. All right, Dr. Duke. Anyway.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the strains of radical Jewish racism and supremacism that existed in the very highest echelons of Israel by people who are presented to us like as more moderate. And a perfect example of that is the most important shaper in the actual creation of the Jewish state itself, David Ben-Gurion. And it's just fascinating the material that he wrote, that he said, and one of the classics was a prophecy or a prediction for the future. And what this was is Look magazine was asking world leaders at the time, and Ben-Gurion was one of them. They have to look at the magazine again and what year it was, but it's, I believe, the early 60s. And they asked these world leaders what their vision was for the future, for their country and for, you know, the world. So Ben-Gurion writes the story for Look, and he says that he envisioned that, this is decades later, that there would be a united nation, a new United Nations, a truly United Nations, where all armies would be abolished, and the headquarters for this new United Nations would be Jerusalem, where the United Nations would build a shrine to the Jewish prophets, and there in Jerusalem would sit the Supreme Court of mankind. It's really a stark thing. So all armies abolished. The truly United Nations be headquartered in Israel, where this body would build a shrine to the Jewish prophets. I mean, I guess the Jewish, it sounds like the Jewish religion to me. And that there would sit the Supreme Court of mankind. And that's really kind of a, that's kind of a wild prophecy, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of a, that's kind of like an in your face.
Yeah. Well, let me hide you for a second.
Just a Jewish, you know, control of the world.
Yeah, let me pipe in. Now, as you said, before I hit the record button, Ben-Gurion, he was not religious. He was, I usually hear him described as atheist. He was not a religious person. So it's not as if he was making this prediction based on his faith in some sort of religious scripture that was written thousands of years ago. So if he's not religious and he sees the world coming under Jewish rule, right, being ruled from Jerusalem with shrines to the Jewish prophets, it says a couple of things. One is that he sees Jews as being somehow racially superior. This is a racial thing. It's not a religious thing.
Yeah.
But also,
at the titular head of the new globalist, truly United Nations of the world, where all armies are abolished and you have a complete controlled global government, essentially headquartered in Israel and ruled by Jews.
Right. And so headquartered in Israel, ruled by Jews, but then the fact that he would talk about prophets, that there would be prophets to, you know, the Jewish overlord, or shrines to the prophet, to me that indicates that he was thinking somehow religion would be a tool. That religion would be a tool. You know, you have the most Christian religion and the Muslim religion accepting Jewish prophets. So somehow that would be a tool for getting people under Jewish control. What do you think about that?
I think it's a pretty accurate description and a synopsis that you just drew there. And I think it's a fascinating concept. And I do think that these Jews have always had this messianic tradition, even whether they were atheists or not. I think communism itself, as far as envisioned by Trotsky and many of the Jews like Lenin, saw Bolshevism as the entity by which Jews would become the supreme, so to speak, the supreme court of mankind, just like Ben-Gurion saw Israel as having the supreme court for mankind, ensconced in Jerusalem, center of Jews, and interestingly enough, part of those prophecies that they have, the Messiah returning, the red heifer that is so talked about by the right-wing circles and other, and Jews are talking about it, where this sacred red heifer has been found, and that's signaling the Antichrist.
Was it found, or was it genetically engineered, or was it specifically bred?
Well, I meant by found, I don't think that I'm not saying that they discovered it somewhere. I don't know the details of that. All I know is that this Jewish prophecy, or this, it's a really weird thing, but this red heifer, I think they call it, that when they have this red heifer, that it's going to symbolize the coming of the Jewish Messiah. And of course, the prophecy of the Jewish Messiah is not, it's not like Jesus Christ being the doctor for salvation. It's mm-hmm. Messiah that's going to rule over the physical government.
And by the way, we seem to be having a little bit of trouble with our connection. Maybe you can speak a little closer to the mic. But there's one thing I want to ask you about. So Jews, the religious Jews, in the religious scriptures, Jews are God's chosen people. That's pretty ethnocentric. But right. How unique is it? You know, like the Eskimos, they call themselves Inuit. And I think Inuit means the people. And, if you're not Inuit, then you're not the people. So that in and of itself might not be so unique, but what amazes me is that even when Jews give up the religion, when they stop believing in their own scriptures, they still maintain that world, the world domination, that they are somehow special in the world. They maintain this ideology, whether you're looking at Trotsky trying to have a world revolution and bring the entire world under
the Comintern,
Jewish Comintern, Bolshevik rule, or the Zionists who aren't necessarily, some of them are socialists, some of them aren't, but
global banking, global tech, global robotics, global control of the, so to speak, the global hive mind.
Yeah, and so this notion of Jewish supremacy and Jewish destiny to rule the world goes beyond the religion. And even when they leave the religion behind, so often they don't leave that supremacism behind. And this is what's really remarkable to me. Yes. I don't know, what are your thoughts? Why do you think that is?
Well, it's showbiz. It's Hollywood, right? I think how can you not have Jews and have drama? I mean, it's like, I think Jews have always understood the power of religion. And how many times have we heard people identify even Bolshevism like a religion? I mean, it's really a belief system, and a very, very powerful one, where people have devoted their lives to it. It's like almost like a second coming. It's almost like a redemption for the world. Jews have the word, describing this making the world right, which basically means making the world safe for Jews. But it's way more than being safe for Jews. It's exactly what Leitman said in the Times of Israel article about new anti-Semitism, where they always talk about Tikkun Olam, I think it's called. And in that, he says that the Jews of the world, you know, must exercise their power. They do have power. And they must unite together while they can and seal that power over the Gentile world. If they don't do that, they will be holocausted. If they do that, they will, I guess, rise to the heights of power in almost a biblical sense. It's so interesting about Judaism because it is George Lincoln Rockwell used to say that how did he term Judaism? He termed it like, didn't say paranoia. What did he use to describe it? There's a psychological psychological thing called, you know, not megalomania. What's it called? It's called where you have feelings of persecution and illusions of grandeur. Paranoia. Oh.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so he said use of a paranoid, you know, psychology. But yes. And if you look at that, I mean, again, the writings of a guy who was head of the State of Israel, this little land in the Middle East, inconsequential in terms of size and numbers, and but having this vision that it's going to be the center of the whole world and the center of the United Nations it's going to be. And all laws and rules would emanate from this Jewish center. And we see that preached in so many different things. It's done by Jewish, what you might say is Jewish laymen, not necessarily Jewish priests, but it's definitely encapsulated by the Jewish religion itself. You and I have talked a lot about Rabbi Obadiah Yosef and his son, who now is the top Sephardic rabbi, they just made open pronouncements to their fellow Jews that the only purpose of the Gentiles on earth, the only purpose that all of humanity is, 99.8% of humanity, and it's important for us to repeat this again and again until people understand, but they have this vision that the only purpose of all humanity is to serve Jews. And in that prediction has a lot of genocidal intent. The Noahide laws, we've talked a little bit at different times on programs over the years. I've, you know, read them. It's easy to find things on Noahide laws. But if you actually read this, I think it's 7 Noahide laws, it basically gives the rule of how the Goyim have got to just totally serve the Jews, like, you know, essentially like slaves. And by the way, the Goyim, they're not Jews. They're not going to be allowed in Judaism. They're slaves to Jews, but they have to follow the Jewish law. And by Jewish law, they've got to serve their Jewish masters. That's not an exaggeration. That's not some sort of a nightmare by some anti-Semite somewhere. This is what the Noahide laws would suggest. For instance, that, you know, that they call Christians idolaters in the Talmud, and they're called Christ an idolater, right? Basically, because by saying that he was the Son of God, they're saying that he is setting himself up like an idol. And any Gentile that believes in Jesus Christ, you know, deserves death. And that's very clear in the Talmud. And, but so the Noahide laws are basically a whole set of laws. And by the way, the Talmud itself has passages.
They're so precise in terms of some of their weird predictions. And they're early in the numerology. I don't know if you're familiar with much of the Talmud, but they have all these numerical things.
I'm not nearly as familiar as you. So you can.
Well, the numerology is, it's good examples. Like they have these numbers. It's like the 6 million, the 6-pointed star of David, and all these other. It's very interesting. But and one of the things in the Talmud are these Jewish. They're really weirdos. I mean, it's not only do they look weird when they're chanting their prayers and so forth in their yeshivas, and are, you know, they almost like go into a trance where they're shaking their heads, right?
Right.
While they're repeating this memorized writ. But they, what they say, you know, the kind of things that they proclaim are just kind of crazy things. Like, for instance, the Talmud specifically has this numerology type thing. Anyway, it says that every Jew, according to the Talmud, will have 2,600 slaves. Every Jew will have 2,000, maybe it's 2,607 or something like that. I don't remember the exact number, frankly. I'm sorry, I don't. But that is very clear. It's been talked about by many Jewish people that, you know, have studied the Talmud and made secular talks about it and said different things about it. But if you look at it, interestingly enough, that really suggests that Jews, a very small number of Jews, would have the equivalent of 2,600 slaves. It means that this tiny percentage of the population of the earth will be Jews, but they would control. Of course, maybe they'll control total slaves and total things that are conditioned by them, like robots, which they can enforce it. I mean, we're probably going to the point where the armies of the future, they won't even be armies of people. They'll be armies of robots. That's not science fiction anymore, right?
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
So excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Armies of the future. They won't even be armies of people. They'll be armies of robots. That's not science fiction anymore, yeah. Right?
So some years ago, I don't remember who I was talking to, but I had a show where the theme of the show was, is the future going to be dominated by robots or clones? And by clones, I meant, you know, genetically engineered people.
That'd be the perfect kind of slave, right?
Is it going to be robots or clones? What's the future?
Be perfect slaves. Clones of humanity, would they still have the flesh of human beings, but they would be totally be able to be programmed to the Jewish will, Jewish domination, Jewish, you know, the Jewish affinity, right? Remember, you know, the great Avadia Yosef in his Sunday sermon, or Saturday sermon, I should say, when he said that the only purpose of Gentiles is to dig, to bind, plant, to reap, to seed, and work, while the Jews are meant, and talk about hypocritical and just really nasty and hateful. All Jews are meant to sit as a fendi, master, and eat, while Gentiles do all the work. Now that's an apocalyptic vision, isn't it? I mean, that's like a maniac vision.
And this isn't just some obscure person. So this is, I heard you refer to him in one of your recent shows as kind of the equivalent of the Pope. And if Judaism has two main traditions, you know, Sephardic and Ashkenazi, and he is the head of one of those traditions. Well, you know, Christianity, I guess, has three main traditions, Roman Catholicism, Eastern Orthodox, and Protestantism, and the Pope is the leader of one of those. So I think that's pretty good analogy there.
But they're not, the Catholic Church is probably the most powerful. What most of the world looks at with Christianity, even though there are certain Protestant divisions and Orthodox divisions, and Orthodox is not that far away from Catholicism. But the fact is, I think that's really undeniable. The man with the most clout, or the most respected Jewish teacher, spokesman, the person who has the ultimate power, as compared with if you have the Ashkenazi chief rabbi. And you have the Sephardi chief rabbi. But the Sephardi chief rabbi, he's the guy who really has the power in Israel. And he's the guy that, through the Chas party and the other parties, he's the fellow that sets all marriage policy, which is also period enough to do which race, marriage policy, immigration policy. You know, the way Jews live is set by the Sephardic rabbi.
And the current government of Israel that is embarking on this genocide, they are dominated by not just religious Jews, but in particular Sephardic religious Jews.
Yes.
Netanyahu is 100% beholden to him. Without the support of the followers of Rabbi Yosef and his son, Netanyahu likely would just be in prison.
Right.
So he's completely beholden to these people. And this wasn't, right. You know, you had, oh gosh, I guess Pope Benedict was somehow tangentially implicated in you know, abuse of altar boys or something like that. And so he had to resign, and not 100% disgraced, but at least partially disgraced. Right. But Rabbi Yosef, after he said this stuff, what kind of funeral did he have?
He had the largest funeral in the history of Israel. Now, Israel just has a few million Jews, and they had 800,000 at his funeral, the largest funeral in Israeli history. And just literally everybody who's anybody in Israel, whether it be philosopher, politician, religious person, or not religious person, you know, was present. And and of course, this is the guy that he also basically, and he's quoted in the BBC. That's the original assembly of the piece they published on their website years ago, BBC. And one of the subtitles that shows about him, what he called about the annihilation of the seed of the Palestinians, of the Palestinian genetic source, right? The annihilation of that. And there's a lot of this kind of genocide that goes way, way beyond just what we talk about with the Amalekites, comparing the Palestinians to the Amalekites that Netanyahu did, which was a very, very clear symbology. But goes way, way beyond that, because a good example is even the Amalekite, the whole Amalekite genocide.
Sweet Leilani, heavenly flower,
the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Health Simple with Colorado Shieldji. Fact bit number one. What goes in must come out. Whatever we ingest, breathe in, or transfer by contact must be expelled. Expelled directly as burned calories, through perspiration, respiration, or expelled via urinary and gastric channels. Every element that is not properly used or removed by our bodies become toxins. And toxins, as we know, are causal to every disease and ailment. Toxins are what makes us subpar, unable to be at our best. Be your healthy best by cleansing your body of daily and deeply embedded toxins. Live stronger, and we hope live longer. Shilajit, legit Shilajit, that is, like Colorado Shilajit, is perhaps the greatest homeopathic whole body remover of toxins made by Mother Earth.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the EaseOff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EaseOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org, T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
You are my paradise completer.
Oh, lovely Leilandier.
You are my dream.
Clear symbology, but goes way, way beyond that, because a good example is even the Amalekite. The whole Amalekite genocide is so very central to Judaism. And Jewish rabbis, Jewish leaders, have written extensively about the whole Amalekite thing. Amalekites have become basically the symbol of Gentiles. And Jews, even though this is a conspiracy theory, it certainly can't be true. But they suggest that one of the greatest failings of Jewish leaders ever was Saul, because Saul was entrusted to kill all the Amalekites. And he felt a little pity for some of the Amalekites in his heart, and he lets some of the Amalekites survive. And they look at the whole book of Esther, and they look at the slaughter of the Persians with Haman and his 10 sons, I think. They look at that as like a final or ultimate validation of the fact that finally the Jews got it right. They killed Haman and his 10 sons. And they have, this is what's called Purim. And Purim is one of the most famous. It's almost like a huge celebration of Jews. The slaughter of Haman, supposedly 110,000 Persians, and the killing of Haman, which they claim to be descended from Amalekites, and his 10 sons wiping out the sea. But this is really something that's very, very central in Judaism, about the need to go ahead and wipe out your enemies. And Jews also, in a way that cannot be duplicated by any sort of national socialist or any sort of racist in the world, they go at great length to say that when they have an enemy, that they not only will kill them and kill their seed, destroy their seed, but control their DNA, control their genetic heritage, but they'll also erase them from the memory of history. And I know that some people wrote about this who were kind of Jewish scholars, and some of them, and certainly it was written by a few people that they refer to as anti-Semites. They write about the fact that the Jews, which very much influenced Nuremberg trials and the
execution of Nazi movies, that unlike traditional enemies in wars where people, the enemy was killed, and usually the enemy's families took the bodies and had a grave for them because they are people. But according to the Jewish enduring hatred and enduring genetic aspect of the enemies of Jewry, that they made sure people like Stryker and Goring and all the Nazi leaders that could get executed, they took their ashes, kind of like they buried Osama bin Laden, in a sense. They took those ashes, they burned them, and then they scattered them in the river so no one could ever find them again. I mean, they couldn't have any shrines. They couldn't have historical, like, significance to people, that they're removed from history. And that's very prominently written about Talmud. I remember reading that as a young boy, and those passages, looking some of those up. That's interesting. What do you think of that? That's kind of an intolerance that goes to new bounds, isn't it? Not only are you going to kill your enemy, you're going to do these genocides against them, like they did with, so many times before, the mass murders. And this is something that we talk about a lot on our program over the years, but it's like the gravity of the mass murders and the death toll from Jewish power.
And then
it's almost like unimaginable, isn't it? I mean, you think about
the top it off to attempt to erase the memory, which is the complete opposite of, like, the whole post World War II, Holocaust religion mantra is never forget, right? Isn't that it?
Never forgive, never forget.
Well, yeah, the never forgive is usually not spoken, at least not in public, but it's obviously there. But never forget, and yet
they've actually, I've seen many quotes of Jews about, and sometimes they say, never forget and never forgive. That is something Jewish scholars have definitely written many times. They don't believe in anything called Christian forgiveness. That was a very big departure. What Jesus taught compared to Jewish. I mean, remember, the Old Testament was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And Christ came and said, no, there's a new message, right? Forgive thine enemies. Forgive. Forgiveness. Love. Kindness. And that's not part of Old Testament Judaism, or certainly not Talmudic Judaism. What do you think of that?
Yeah, and so you mentioned earlier that they, as a group, their culture seems to be thoroughly permeated by paranoia. And I do think paranoia is really the working term, more than evil, more than all sorts of other things, more than greed even. I think it's paranoia. Has it always been paranoia? I don't know, but certainly in my lifetime, that's what it is. And the Holocaust narrative is one that, people look at it and it's obvious to the Goyim that they use it to infuse guilt in the Goyim. But just as much, and even more perhaps, it infuses paranoia into the Jews. And so these Jews that at work, at the gym, at school, who are, perfectly pleasant people, you can get along with them just fine, but there is this paranoid streak. And the paranoia, what it does to the Jews, who otherwise seem to be perfectly decent, nice people, is it infuses in them this idea that either we have to dominate or we're going to get genocided. And
yeah,
that leads them to ruthless behavior that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's what I see.
Yes, I think that's Absolutely correct. There's a lot to be gleaned by this article by Leitman, right? And and this guy has said this Kabbalistic studies, when Kabbalism is really part of the deepest, darkest parts of the Talmud. I mean, the Kabbalah. You know, even if the pop singer Madonna became Kabbalist, but Kabbalism is. And by the way, if you think about the connection of just even the word Kabbalism and Kabbal, and the fact that Kabbal has been kind of it's been a metaphor basically for these high secretive kind of powerful forces.
A cabal, like when Jeffrey Sachs said that American foreign policy is run by a cabal, right?
Yes, that's right.
Which he said, yeah.
And it's a Kabbalah. But another thing, it's like, it's almost like a mental illness. I mean, paranoia would be considered like a mental condition.
Yes.
I think that they used to define it. I don't know if with the latest definition. I haven't read that in many, many years, but I think paranoia is defined as illusions or grandeur and feelings of persecution. Is that right?
Yeah, paranoid schizophrenia. And I have, unfortunately, in my life...
I was just going to say schizophrenia, too, by the way. Because is it really paranoia what is schizophrenia, really? I mean, if you say somebody is schizoid, and of course, interestingly enough, Jewish psychologists themselves, Freudians and others, right, have said many, many times, and they actually argue that schizophrenia runs in Jews 100 times more than it does in any other people.
Well, I wouldn't say 100 times more because I know it runs in the Irish. I'm sorry to say that, but
maybe it does because you're Irish. What can I say? But
yeah, I know. Otherwise, I wouldn't care.
I've read prominent Jews talk about the problem of schizophrenia as a mental condition among Jews.
I've never read
that among Irish, you see.
Yeah, it is. At least, certainly.
Well, maybe it is, but I'm just saying I've never seen the prominence of schizophrenia talked about in terms of Irish. Maybe it does exist, but I've just never run across it. But I've run across it a lot in Jewish
The extent it's more common, it's not 100 times more common. Nothing like that. At any rate,
I think it is. Because wait. Maybe you're right. I don't know. I can't speak authoritatively. I may stand corrected, my friend.
I'm saying not 100 times more.
Schizophrenia is a very tiny percent of the population. Tiny percent of what they call the rate. It's a very small percentage of the mentally ill. But Jews have a tremendous overrepresentation of it compared to other peoples, as generally speaking.
Yeah,
I think. I don't know.
Nowadays, they often talk in terms of a spectrum, right? You know, you have bipolar, which used to be called manic depression, right? People, and obviously, depression is very common. And then the manic phase is typically people feeling, it could be illusions of grandeur, or it could just be like a whole lot of energy. Schizophrenia, I don't know all the definitions, but schizophrenia involves some sort of difficulty in distinguishing between reality and fantasy. There's some difficulty distinguishing reality. And, you know, and paranoid, I think that speaks for itself, you know, the fear, kind of irrational fear. And here's the thing with Jews, the goyim, partly because of the guilt from the Holocaust narrative, the goyim they're always tiptoeing around Jews. They're always walking, what do we call it? Walking on eggshells around Jews. They don't want to get Jews upset. They don't want to say anything insulting. So they're always making excuses. I mean, they're always making excuses for Jewish behavior. They're always scapegoating it on others. It's communists. It's the Chinese. it's whites, it's whatever. And at the end of the day, to the extent that people are not too far gone already, people need to confront reality. They need to confront the truth. And I don't have ill will towards Jews. I really don't. Right. But I think it's in everybody's best interest.
Look at them like a scientist at microscopic slide, you know, and we kind of look at it like a very interesting scientific study of Jewish character. I don't think it's about ill will. I think we're fascinated, like biologists or scientists look at this organism or this characterization or this behavior of some Jews. Let me ask you a question real quick here before we go further from schizophrenia. We still didn't give ourselves, I think, a third definition of the term, right? Because what you said, I think, is correct. Let's define this carefully, right? So what is schizophrenia? I would say, see if you agree with this or not, right? It's characterized by thoughts or experiences or delusions that are out of touch, that are not conforming to reality. Their speech is disorganized. Their behavior doesn't seem to make any sense. It's completely contradictory often. And they also tend to be very compartmentalized, and their behavior is very disorganized. In other words, for instance, I'll give an example. If you tried to say that Jews as a group had more schizophrenia, it would be indicative of Jews who have these really strange interpretations. Let's say the Bible, or the Talmud, or of the world, and these strange expressions. Because, I mean, you look at the yeshivas and you look at the writings of the Talmud, and it's almost like reading about a mentally ill mind in some places. It's that shocking, right? And basically, they have also these Jews who have this schizophrenic kind of character. They really become isolated from other Jews, and all these strange tangents and weird expressions. Like Rabbi Kook's a perfect example of a popular Hasidic movement, and they come up with these really strange things, and they really go off in their own tangents, some of them extreme in many areas. And it's like they've got a difficulty. Well, a typical case study of a schizophrenic would be like someone who has a lot of problems with concentration, that their memory doesn't seem to coincide or peak. They don't really see the world properly in terms of their memory, and schizophrenic people are like that. You know, it's like a husband and wife fighting, and one of them's a schizoid, right? And they don't remember what they did the day before, or they don't remember what they did to their spouse, or they don't remember what their spouse, you know, how the spouse treated them nicely or something the day before. It's basically it's something where they just don't really have a very coherent view of reality. Yeah. What do you think? This is a hard thing.
In terms of a layman's description of schizophrenia, that sounds pretty accurate to me. You mentioned memories, because I've had way more dealings with schizophrenics than anyone should. I'll say that much. But memories. So certain things that were very insignificant that happened in the past, the schizophrenic might completely fixate on them.
Vintage, we're going to sing together, okay?
Time.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized. My lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Anyone should, I'll say that much. But memories. So certain things that were very insignificant that happened in the past, the schizophrenic might completely fixate on them. Other things that clearly never happened in the past are remembered. So you get the false memories. You get these weird selective memories. And then things that
That's like Hanukkah. That's like, With the Persians, you know, it's the same Purim, right? I mean, the idea that a synagogue would read the Megillah, which is the story of Mordecai, you know, and Esther and all that, and killing Haman and his sons and all that, and they read this in their synagogues, and they literally do a skit, and this is in every synagogue basically. They do this. They read the Megillah, and from the Jewish audience, they scream out curses to the Persians, right? And Haman, and all Gentiles, by the way. It's not just Haman, but this is like the archetypical anti-Semite. And they actually do a skit where their kids dress up in costumes like they're Haman and like they're Mordecai, where they literally hang the ones that are playing the part of Haman and his sons. They set up little nooses and they set up a little stage play. And then they have this Megillah where they read the Megillah. And this is all written about a mainstream Jewish material. This is not something that's not known. I mean, this is something that's recognized in Jewish culture. So that's kind of interesting. And it seems to be, if to fit into that whole schizophrenic thing, it's about, they have this memory, right? Or a memory which is faulty,
So they completely demonize Haman. They scream out curses during the synagogue service, and they even pretend to lynch the guy. And you can't even imagine this in a Christian church or in a Buddhist establishment or in sort of Hindu thing celebration or something. But you can see it, and you know about the festive foods they make for Purim, right? When they celebrate the massacre.
Yeah, Haman's ears. But Dr. Duke, I do want to thank you for staying up late and recording this with me. I'm at the end of my time, so I'm going to sign off. If you want to continue discussing things,
it's an interesting discussion. So, you know, we both have a lot of respect for Ronan's, and I love his writings and his courage in so many areas as a Jewish person. Now, he's one of these Jews that both of us have a lot of respect for. Yeah, I think it'd be really great. We ought to make sure that he gets a copy of the show. I have a feeling that listening to it, he would really find it fascinating and a very interesting discussion, which I think would be right up his alley. Maybe you can send it to him. You send a copy.
Reach out to him, and maybe people in the audience might help us. But thank you for joining me.
Well, you could send it probably to I'm sure they have emails off their site you can find, but you could send them a copy of the show very easily by email.
Okay. Well, thank you, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National People Radio.
Where we'll die.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.